Hey, Jamie, I've got a question for you.
What do you want, Tom?
Who's on the podcast this coming Friday? Is it someone big?
Boy.
Is it a big one? Shall I bother listening this week?
Yeah. If I was going to say take.
And I would say off.
No.
Your trousers.
No, no. Take.
Me out.
No. Take.
Paddy McGuinness.
No. Take.
Take on me.
Take that.
Wow.
Have a little patience.
But hang on, presumably you haven't got all three of them, have you? Presumably you've just got one of them.
Buddy, we have all three of them on the podcast. They've released a new album. It's coming out. They're going on tour. They talk about the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, on everything that happened in Take That.
The ins, the outs.
And they reveal it all this Friday.
Exclusively.
On Private Parts.
That's a big one. I'm going to listen to that.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, episode 4, uno, dos, tres, cuatro, and I am so excited. It's a subject I'm so passionate about. Well, two subjects I'm so passionate about, music and mental health, with two people I love dearly and incredibly. And to begin with, on my right hand side, Slang, aka Dan Dare, everybody. Oi! He is a producer, songwriter, and now musician from West London. And sticking to the theme, what I was talking about earlier in episode 2 with Jack, I'm after Slang's property as well, because he lives in a very nice place in West London.
I told you, you can move.
I know, he's actually being real about it as well. It wasn't even it's like, whenever you want to come. Yeah. I'm just like, and I do just turn up with my samosas. Come on, like, wait, you've had one as well.
I've never had a samosa before, and Hussein...
You've never had a samosa?
I hadn't, and then samosa, and then Hussein
He comes to my shed for a studio session, I'm like, whoa.
And he was like, this will be the best thing you've ever tried, and I was like... And to be fair, it was banging.
Yeah.
Solid 10 out of 10.
I'm going to start a stand, by the way. It's going to be called Samosa Street.
Well, you know me, I'm from Southall. Like, all I am growing up with samosas.
He knows about it. All right, so Slang.
Yeah.
Is more talented than you know.
Really?
Yeah, did you know that?
I'm still trying to figure it all out. I'm just a...
He is a highly sought-after musician in the music industry, having written and produced songs for massive names, including Charlie XCX, Marina and the Diamonds, Wretch 32, Newton Faulkner, Wiley, and this incredible artist called Hussein Manoah, to just name a few. He's now channeling all his talents into Slang, being involved with every aspect from songwriting, producing, and performing. Mm. And his songs are a snapshot of the challenging times we are growing up in.
Mm.
Slang, thank you for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me.
And joining him is somebody who I had the pleasure of meeting very recently, and it was actually because of you, and you didn't even realise this. So Slang was performing at Secret Sessions, and I went to go and watch.
Yeah, you went to go and watch.
And you know, sometimes you plan things and they don't actually happen.
It wasn't my fault. Destiny
works in different ways. It wasn't my fault.
I'm not pushing the blame. I'll take it. It was my fault.
Okay, so basically, what happened, everybody? I went to watch Slang and Ryan Keane perform, but what happened was their set got delayed and I had to go and see Sinead Harnett's gig. But during that moment, Luke came on stage.
It was amazing.
And then I was like, oh my God, who is this?
It was unreal, that was like...
And then I saw Luke perform, and then as soon as I saw Luke perform, I had to leave because then I had to go and see Sinead perform. But saying that, I saw Slang and Ryan perform live together when they supported Corey Harper, and it was incredible.
They slayed it.
Is it? Yeah, I expect nothing less.
Just shut it down.
I expect nothing less.
Just screaming and shouting, basically. Luke was singing like an angel, and I just come on and just swore and talked about dark times.
No, but it's needed, though. It's definitely needed.
The outfit as well.
Yeah, he was dressed up as like a Christmas man.
Yeah.
All right, so Luke Burr is without question one of the UK's hottest emerging talents. In 2019, Luke was catapulted into the charts when his version of Bobby Caldwell's What You Won't Do For Love was synced to the UK's most popular TV show, Love Island. The song shot straight to number one on the Shazam charts in the UK and peaked at number three in the iTunes R&B charts. Having previously worked and toured with Rudimental, Luke is releasing his debut EP, Butterflies, in early 2020, as well as performing a headline show very soon coming up in London's Omera, which is just around the corner from here. It's a beautiful venue, by the way.
Yeah, it's a nice venue.
In April, and a UK tour is soon to be announced. Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise for Luke Barrett! And we've been working on some stuff as well, which is very cool. All right, so I don't even know where we're going to start this, honestly. So how did we meet?
I went to the I Am Whole gig with the founder of Movember and Ryan Keane, like on or off.
Yeah.
And like I knew a lot of the people that were on stage, like Ed and James and all these other people.
But you didn't know me?
No. But
everyone, you didn't know me?
No. I didn't. But I think I'd seen like quotes and stuff from you on the internet.
And then, you know, we've been going viral, you know. We've been going...
He's a nightmare. And then I saw your gig. It was incredible. I was really touched by, like... Apparently, you was only supposed to speak for like 30 seconds. And you spoke for 5 minutes.
You know what, yeah.
It was incredible.
I said to Jordan, like, I remember being there at I Am Whole, yeah, and I was backstage and Ed Sheeran was sound checking, and I was like, oh my God, that's Castle on the Hill. And then I said, how on earth am I going to follow that? And I remember I was with Holly, Dylan and Amy, three people that are close to me, and I said to them, I don't know what to do. And they just said, just be yourself. Yeah. And I was like, but what if they don't want to hear that? And they're like, no, they do, just be yourself. And when I went out there and I performed, they were so silent. It was like probably one of the best gigs of my life.
It was magical, man. Yeah, it was really taking my
And heart. Then I noticed when Ed Sheeran left, I was like, all right, now that Ed Sheeran's gone, maybe I can squeeze in another extra minute. Yeah. Like normally, because if you're before the big person, you can't really take longer. Yeah. But whereas this lineup was not based on status, it was based on just like, I don't know how they made the lineup. So I was just like thrown into this mix of incredible names, and I was just like, well, okay, no one's telling me to get off. I'm just gonna carry on.
I'm glad you did that, man.
It was really beautiful. Oh, so we met at I Am Whole, yes, wow. And now we're on I Am Whole Truth Podcast together.
Yes.
Wow, world works in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
And we already know how we met.
We do. Yep. Not quite as interesting, but Ed Sheeran wasn't involved.
I remember I saw you at the gig and I was just like, no, your voice is incredible. And then before you know it, he was trying my dad's samosas.
I can second that. The gig was banging.
It was really
the samosas were banging. They were better than my voice.
Dan, dear. Yes. When I first heard your songs, they sent me into another world. They sent me into a real world in a world.
Okay.
And I felt like mentally you was able to encapsulate what many people aren't able to do.
Okay.
With your music and your writing and your storytelling. I know where that inspiration comes from. Mm. But how hard was it for you first to actually delve into real life issues, like with regards to your mental state of mind, and then convey that into your music? Did you ever feel like you was exposing a part of yourself that you didn't think you would one day talk about?
Totally, yeah. I mean, I grew up in a household of, like, my dad was a gangster and he was in prison a lot, and my mum was a really hard woman who used to be around all the time and take care of all of the madness, because I lived in a house with 11 people in a 3-bedroom house.
Wow.
And there was always madness going on, so everyone, you can't really show any weakness in that environment, especially the area I was growing up in was quite bad as well, so I was quite hard and angry for a long time till I got to like 20 to about 23, 24. Mm-hmm. And I met my friend Ryan Keane, who really helped me like expand my mind a bit and talk a lot more, and like just especially with music, because I was a gram producer, so I'd just make beats. I was just a beat maker.
Was you on Acid Pro?
No, I was on Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops, yeah. Now, Acid Pro, you can't make beats on Acid Pro. It was just recorded.
You can make them on anything. Yeah. But I was just like, so I'd be in the studio, like, I'm the guy, I'm the Ruby.
When you say studio, where was this studio?
Me and Zed Dot, a guy called Zed Dot, who's a grand producer. Well, he's a producer, not grand producer, but we used to have a production team with another guy called Rhymes. And then
before this, how did you find that?
Before that, I used to do Pirate Radio.
Okay.
So we used to go to, there was a station called Freeze FM in West London, because I'm from West London. And yeah, it was underneath a kebab shop in Rainers Lane.
Wow.
And it was like, it was like you had to pay £5 to go there and you broadcast to like, I don't know how many, it was a time of
Pirate Radio was popping.
Dude.
Pirate Radio was popping. Dude, I remember. It was,
we used to have some fun times there. There was True Tiger, which were another collective.
And
we,
how old was you at the time?
I was like 14 years old.
So 14, music 15. Music from then was embedded in your DNA?
It was embedded in my DNA, but it was like in the area, it was more of like a collective, but we was a gang. It was like a boys, you could call it. And then we started doing music and got a little more professional when everyone started releasing songs way before Spotify, and we used to burn CDs, go to the studio.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have Bluetooth songs to each other?
All of that. Sony Ericsson, all of that. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't that personal with my grime music. It was very like what rhymed the best and what kind of sounded good in terms of like rhyming that syllable.
Yeah. It's like a lyrical showcase.
Yeah, it was. It was just like, and then I went into writing songs for others because I was like, grime's just too, like, yeah, it was too unprofessional. When I was doing it, like, Skepta was a DJ then. Do you know what I mean? Like, Wiley had just done Wearing My Rolex and there was like all these other things going on. And I was around all that circle and I used to work with those guys and it was just too, for me, I wanted to get out of this hood mentality of being like, we can't make money out of this, we can't do that, we can't do this. And then I started producing and writing for like Charlie XCX and Marina and the Diamonds. I got thrown in the studio. I was lucky because my manager at the time was a guy called Nick Worthington, who signed Marina and the Diamonds, signed The Streets, signed Plan B, developed them all. And he kind of took me under his wing. And so he used his connections to throw me in with all these people.
And did you ever feel like your creativity was pressured by stress?
Oh, totally.
And how did you handle that?
I didn't handle it. I was so anxious because I was just a beat maker. I didn't really know about writing words and melody.
Yeah.
Although it was in me and eventually it came out. But I would go in there so stressed. I couldn't sleep the night before being like, oh my God, wow. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't even know how to set up the microphone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, we can record vocals. Yeah. I'd be like, yeah, cool.
Yeah,
like,
because your entry into music was very unorthodox.
Yeah, it was like a game, like I was playing a computer game with my mates.
Yeah.
Did you fake it when you got in there though?
Totally.
Like, so they wouldn't have known that you weren't.
I don't know, I've never asked them.
But only you knew how you were feeling.
Yeah, I felt horrible. And they were just, and then we'd get to the end of the session and they'd be like, oh, that was dope. You made something that I totally wouldn't have made and da 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 da. And I was just like, all right, cool. But like, what's next? And they're like, can you mix it? And I was like, yeah, cool. I didn't know about
and this was this, and this was before YouTube was teaching us ever how to do everything.
Yeah, there was nothing. There was like, this is a good 10 years ago. Well, yeah. I mean, YouTube in the last however many years has
transformed many things.
Yeah, yeah. So,
anybody seen Baby Shark, by the way?
No.
Baby Shark?
Yo.
Oh, I heard the song.
You need to see
that
Baby Shark.
Yeah. I got 10 nephews and nieces, man.
3 billion views.
3 billion views.
3 billion views on Baby Shark. All right, Mr. Burr.
My story's not half as interesting as this.
No. You can't say that.
Everything's brilliant.
When did you discover music and what did it do for you mentally?
I think my dad was banging to his soul and sort of disco and calling the gang.
You're from Hornchurch, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, in Essex. And my dad listened to that as a kid and then he just used to play his records in the car. And for whatever reason, I really resonated at like a really young age, maybe like 8 or 9, when no one was listening to that sort of music, you know, certainly in my school.
What were they listening to?
If it was on Capital Radio, they'd listen to it, do you know what I mean? Yeah, but for some reason, I was into Earth, Wind & Fire or whatever, you know, and I didn't know why, and I didn't think why I liked that music. It just resonated with me, and I loved the chords, and I loved the voices. And then I started to sing, and for some reason, no one in my family was musical at all, but I had a tone and no one could really understand it. And my dad was like, I think he can sing, you know. So I had some sort of piano lessons and whatever and got a bit bored and taught myself the rest. And I entered a little local competition at the pub and I thought I was terrible at this time. I didn't have a clue. And I was like, and all these girls were there like so prepared, who had been doing it years. And I won this competition. And from that moment, I was like, oh, this is just what I want to do. Like that buzz of performing and I still get that same buzz now, like so that was what set me off. And then I just started doing every pub in Essex singing, And for me at the time, it was just, I don't know why I had this voice, but I felt so lucky to have a tone, and I could hit like four notes and the rest was like terrible. Mm-hmm. And I've got OCD, so I just like become obsessed with being the best I could be. And I'm sort of like that with everything. And with my voice, I just expanded it to as good as I can get. And there's always room for improvement. And then I just started singing in all the pubs in Essex and had some really, really terrible gigs. I signed a deal when I was like 19, I think, and I thought, oh, this is it. I've hit the jackpot here. And at that point, I was a singer. I wouldn't say I was an artist. I wrote a few songs. But
what's the difference?
So I was just, I could sing, and I could sing anything, and I could sound pretty good, but being an artist, for me, you know, you've got to have something to say. You've got to have a message that you want to get across. You've got to have feelings that, and you've got to have a reason why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was, I probably convinced myself I did, but looking back, I wasn't an artist. And then I went through that whole process and learned how the industry worked.
Wait, did you used to have a tag name back in the day?
No.
I used to be really good at graffiti, you know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, actually really good. Yeah, sorry, going off topic. All right, so you discovered you could sing, you entered these competitions in the pubs, and then pub gigs are hard. I mean, I've done a few as a poet. They're not easy.
No.
They're definitely not easy.
The smaller the gig, the harder, man. I find it's just...
But no one would listen, and like I would hate that.
How did that make you feel?
It was the worst feeling in the world, right? And I was getting paid money to sing in pubs, and my mates were working in shops, and I was getting what they were earning in a whole week.
Yeah.
But I come out to, and I said, I'd rather earn half of what I earn, and everyone listen. That's all I wanted. So I just, I'd go the next week, and it was my challenge. How could I get all these to listen? And I'd have the, go on.
Sorry, no, that's really interesting you took that approach, because some people might have taken that situation and said, well, no one's listening to me. This has really demoralised me. I'm going to leave. So where did you... What in your mindset was installed, and where do you think that came from for you to say, you know what, today 10 people listen, next week 15 are going to, where did that come from?
I don't know. I've always had sort of a drive in me, and I think I believed in my voice, and it sometimes just takes one person at the end of the night to go, you were quality, mate. And that just makes me, I believe that, you know, and then I thought, I'm going to convince everyone that I just wanted to entertain people. And I wanted to give people a great night. And when I had the drunk woman come up to me the first time going, can you sing Rihanna? And I'm on the piano. I'm like, I don't know what to say. But then you learn. The next week she asked her the same thing and you have a little funny response. And you learn how to get a crowd back. And you learn the songs to sing. And you learn the way to perform. And honestly, there's no better feeling for me than entertaining people. And that's
why? Why?
I can't really explain why, but I don't care where I am. I don't care the social class of these people. I don't care where it is. I just want them to dance or sing along or have a feeling. And if I am in control of that hour or so, you know, and taking them on a ride of emotions.
Yeah, that's incredible.
There's no better feeling.
It's because I feel like our jobs as entertainers, we provide a form of escapism for people.
Yeah.
We create a world away from the problems that they're currently experiencing and facing and say, you know what, step into this for an hour.
And forget about everything.
Yeah. But then what do you both do to make sure that you're good? Because I know you go for runs.
I meditate a lot. I walk a lot. I should read more. But I'm very like, I left school when I was 13 years old.
When did you get into meditation?
About 5 years ago. I'm quite lucky. I have two goddaughters. Their parents are amazing. They live in LA and they're like bang into meditation and stuff. Yeah. And they really like took me under their wing and taught me how to channel my energy in the way. Yeah. So ever since then, really. But before that, I had no escape from like the way I was feeling. I'd be angry all the time. I'd go and like punch bags.
Okay, so wait, slow down a second. Yeah, how do I have that conversation with angry slang?
Yeah,
saying he's angry at the world and the situation and the environment. Have you ever tried meditation? Like, how does that conversation?
Okay, so,
because for one, it cannot feel like it's designed for you.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Definitely not.
Did you know you needed something?
Yeah, because I went to the lowest point in my life when I tried to kill myself and I was in a really toxic relationship and I hit rock bottom and I was just like, then I just kind of opened my mind to everything because I'm like, I have all this stuff built up in me and I don't know how to release it. And then I had therapy and then I had hypnotherapy, because I was so ignorant to all of that, like growing up in a really hard environment, my mum and dad would never talk about anything, you know, like really serious stuff, like losing family members and people dying and getting murdered, and they wouldn't even talk about it. They'd just sweep it under the rug. So to me, that was the most natural thing to do until it hit me and I was isolated away from my family. I was like, what am I going to do now? Yeah. Where I was quite lucky, I had some amazing friends around me that facilitated all of that for me, and they really helped me. And without them, to be honest, I really wouldn't be here today.
Well, no, listen, firstly, thank you for sharing what you just shared. And secondly, like, what you've done with your pain is incredible, because I feel like you've gone and put it somewhere and your pain has like allowed you to flourish. It's really interesting because I've worked with both of you in a studio setting, and Slang's way of working is so different to my way of working. Like, I'm there with a book and a pen and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna sit here until something comes to me. And he's walking around the room going, and he's just like, try this. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, oh, that sounds quite good. Like, where did that come from?
The same thing. I don't come from a musical family. Like, no one in my family ever showed me music.
Yeah.
Or they didn't put a vinyl.
It just comes from feeling, right?
Yeah, from feeling. So I was just...
I think it's beautiful. And I feel like the fact that, like, when I'm reading your biography, like, half of the stuff you did, I had no idea that you'd done. Mm. But I can see now you being put into a situation and someone says to you, go on, exercise your pain. You're like, well, that's all I got. All right, then. Because we're so used to, like, bottling it up that when it comes out, it helps. So music, would you say music saved your life?
100 million percent, yeah.
Wow. Any songs in particular? Or just the whole concept of music as a whole?
Just writing how I felt on a piece of paper, regardless if it was a song, really helped. And then I put it into music. It was massive for me. I know it sounds cliche, like, oh, my feelings, blah, 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 but it really was like a massive thing for me. And then ever since then, I've wrote down how I'm feeling all the time and stick it in a safe place rather than just bottling it up in here where it's everything's so intense and overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And actually something that Jordan Stevens really helped me with when I was at my lowest point, I sat in a cafe with him for like 20 minutes and because he was going through some similar stuff, and he had said in the past that he really struggled with like obsessive thoughts, especially around suicide. Some people obsess over like really perverse things or really bad things. I was obsessing over suicide. And he told me to read a book called The Imp of the Mind. It's about perverse thoughts, and it has like priests, teachers, firemen, policemen, just talking about how normal it is to just have these mad thoughts in your brain, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're a bad person or you're going to do them, you know? And I read that book and I was just like, everything become a little bit more manageable.
Wow. And was you encouraged to read from young or not?
Never.
That's something you took upon yourself.
I was never encouraged to do education. Like, if I had a day off, like, bunk school, my mum would be like, what are you doing? She wouldn't be like, you need to go in school and learn. It was just never really that. It was never a thing in my family.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
My brothers both. My brother got sectioned when he was 12 and he was put in a boarding school. So he wasn't really trying to learn. He was just trying to get himself back, you know, because he was mad. And my eldest brother was the same. He got kicked out of school when he was, I think he was 12. And they put him into like one of these units, you know, the units where they stick all the bad kids. And and then he was there like a week and he's like, I can't do this. They're treating me like an idiot. And then from then, saying that though, my two younger sisters, they finished school and go to college and stuff. So that's definitely progress.
Yeah, and I feel like you sharing your pain through music, that has definitely helped me as well. There's like Sweet Lies.
I'm glad, man.
Yeah, you need to listen to this song of Slang's called Sweet Lies. It's an incredible, incredible story. And the thing is, when I heard it live, I took so many more different things from it from when I just listened to it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Very, very interesting.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, Mr. Burr, have you ever been overwhelmed by what you wrote?
If I'm getting like the odd time when I'm writing something or I'm sitting on the piano and I play something and sing something, if I get goosebumps, like that's when I know. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But what gets in the way for me is overthinking. So like I like you're just talking about when Slang's in the studio, he's going off, and I'm sure that that's so sort of natural. And I look, I'm sometimes like that, but often I'm like, I feel I put so much pressure on myself, which get and the thoughts get in the way of the feelings. And the moment I start thinking too much and I start feeling less, and the songs become worse, and they don't mean as much, and then I just move on and I don't come back to that song. But if I can get into that place where I was in it yesterday and sitting on the piano and I don't think of anything, and 2 hours have gone by and I've wrote a song, and I've not thought, you know, I've just felt, and they're the songs that I think really connect.
100%. And talk me through, so you sit down, where's your creative space?
So, I mean, mine's... sometimes I go to the studio and work with other people, but often it's just me and the piano.
Mobile phone on or off?
Off. I just feel like with me, I don't... I'm really trying to spend less time on my phone, and it's, I'm not really achieving it at the moment, but there's so many notifications, and the moment that I see an Instagram thing come up or an email, my brain subconsciously goes there. Of course, I'm not 100% in the song. So I try my...
That's so bad. It's such a distraction.
And then I mute all that.
I spend an hour a day on each app. Well, I have an hour limit on each app.
I was in the studio last night and I was enjoying it. And then it got to like midnight and then I was ordering Uber Eats. And the next thing you know, I'm spending like half hour on Instagram and something else. And then the Uber's not there and I'm tracking it and I'm like...
So how does that... I know how this makes me feel when you get distracted. When you're on the road of creative genius and incredible things are happening, you're writing about all of this incredible like trauma, pain or life experience you've gone through, you've managed to get into bars or stuff, and then you get distracted. I get so angry. I get angry at myself. I get angry at the one that distracted me. I get angry.
So you distract yourself.
I'll be in the studio and take accountability.
H, we'll write a whole song and he goes, I'm changing the song name and I've ripped the verse again. I'm like, wait, how have you managed to do that in 5 minutes?
I think there's too many distractions.
When I'm focused, the focus is laser. Like, you've both seen it. It is just like nothing. There could be an earthquake outside. It will not move me. But when I'm distracted, it's very bad. And it's the output of how I feel for the rest of the day afterwards. On the form of therapy that helps me is now actually... destructing me in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I get that. Like, music for me is, although it's given me so much and helped me so much, it's given me so much, it's been at the detriment to my mental health as well. Like, the music itself has given me incredible highs, and I chase highs naturally, so maybe I would have searched for highs elsewhere if I wasn't getting it from music. But the pressure that I put on myself to be the best I can be in music has affected my mental health for sure.
And what do you do to balance that?
So I just, I think trying so hard to tell myself it's all right not to be amazing. And I struggle with that. Like, I think from such a young age, I was told the harder you work, the more successful you are and the happier you are. And that was great at school because I worked, if you work hard on a test, you do good, you get your good grade or whatever. Or if it's football, you go on. If you play well, you score, you come off. Whereas music and life, it ain't. It's not like the harder you work, the more successful you are. And then also I was achieving certain things and I wasn't happy. So I was like, I wasn't happy as I should be. So it's sort of trying to understand that it, life isn't that simple. And sometimes you might feel a bit flat. You know?
The maddest thing is, when I had the most in my life, was when I was most unhappy. You know,
do you think that's because you want it's so true, the more you get, the more you want?
Kind of, but also like...
You don't get to enjoy it.
Yeah, but I just signed a deal. Same thing, I signed a deal. Just was working with all these big artists and I just got a house in Crouch End. I lived in an amazing place. Every morning I'd go up to Alexandra Palace, look over the whole city, have a gym in my thing, like everything. Ever had money in my bank. And I had nothing because I had my mental health was just gone.
That scares me.
Do you know what? And I can't, you can't, but that's just the past. That's just the past that pushed me to that point. I didn't feel like I started living until I was like 22 years old. Because before that was all just blank to me.
Yeah.
Just so much trauma and so much negative negativity just ruling me. And then I got to a point of being from like 21 to 25 when I got in the music industry properly, made a name for myself and got signed and all these things. But I didn't deal with all those issues from before. So
that ain't come back yet.
Yeah, because I was just blocking them out with working constantly, like being possessive, like OCD, just like doing this, doing that, 10,000 hours, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
got there and I was like, at the tip of the mountain, it was like, this is terrible.
Wow, yeah, I'm very similar. I'm always work. People are like, social life. I'm like, what's that? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing out here.
Well, I think you're told, like, the advice that you see on YouTube or a little snippet on Instagram, Ed Sheeran's talking about this, or someone's talking about, yeah, work hard, do this, do that. And then you sort of convince yourself, oh, well, I've got to work hard, otherwise I'm letting myself down and I'm letting everyone down.
Yeah. As I was saying to someone the other day, yeah, if writers and musicians were paid by the hour, we would be the richest people in the world.
Yeah. Well, they are trying that. They're trying to do that in LA a lot. Writers charge for their time in the session. Which I think
is a bit weird, though.
Yeah, which I think is a bit crazy because it's just like, it's like doing a painting and expecting someone to pay you straight away for it.
Wow, I hear that. I agree about people's time. I mean, in the sense of individually for ourselves. So, like, we are our own carpenters. We are our own painters of our lives. So the amount of nights you sit there and you're just working on something, you're working on an idea.
Yeah.
You're not getting paid for it, but you're doing it because it benefits you. It's going to help you in some way mentally. But then I was saying, if you got paid for that creative process, we would be rich.
You often don't see the results, though. Like, that's what gets me in music. Like,
it's not instantaneous.
No, when life was easy, like in school, or when you could see things, like the harder you work, you get it back.
Yeah.
You don't. If I was a sprinter, the more I'd go out and I'd practice every day, I'd get quicker.
Yeah.
But in music, the more you want to write a good song, you might not write a good song.
Yeah.
And the better you're doing, often you don't see the rewards you know? So it's is this working? I thought life wasn't like this.
It's a lot of deferred gratification. It comes later on. Or it's instant, as you saw. You saw last year with Love Island. That must have been an incredible moment for you.
Yeah, that was wild. But like, that wasn't the best thing I've done. I've done things so much better than that. And then no one's ever heard it. And then nothing ever happens. And then something like that comes out of the blue. And it's like, that gives you that win that just, the next time you need that little bit of inspiration that you think, oh, a win might come. You look back and go, I didn't expect that. So you don't know what's going to come next. And that's what you just got to keep searching for, those little wins wherever they might come from.
You know what? It would be interesting to hear what you lot think of this. I was having a meeting once with somebody from, I believe it was Cambridge University. And they were doing some research on a paper about creative writing. And they said to me, what's the process? I said, process? There's no process. This is a divine intervention. I believe when you write, it's like a gift.
Thoughts.
It's a
just
gift.
Coming from nowhere.
Yeah, I believe you manifest them and they're gifts to you. And I believe in God. So I believe they're gifts from God. I can't give you my process because I basically just wait. Yeah. Like, I'm just waiting for something to turn up. And if it doesn't turn up that night, it don't turn up. So sometimes I'll be sitting there and I'll just write a full stop. And I'm like, well, that's all that was meant to come out today. And trying to explain my creative process is not possible. But I do know keeping it healthy is. So, for example, like when I do sit down to write, no mobile phone.
Yeah.
IKEA candles on deck. Man, I've got bare IKEA candles. Yeah. And some piano music.
There are like candles out there.
Some piano music, like, and I just create a vibe and atmosphere away from the world for myself and hope to create something. That's me. But I know the mindset's so important. For example, like, if I have an argument with you, I couldn't then go and write unless that argument was sorted out. Because that's just the type of person I am. I can't go and function the rest of my daily life if an occurrence happens.
Now, I remember recently we had a session that was the case.
Yeah.
You had a big rap.
No, we didn't.
Punch me in the face.
I turned up to the session. I was actually really happy. I bought like a box of chocolates, sweets, samosas. I was like, I was in such a good mood, but because of something that had happened earlier in the day, I literally just sat there and said, can we just talk today?
Yeah.
And we just spoke.
Yeah.
And that was it. But it was nice to do that once.
Yeah.
You can't make hits all the time, I guess. Yeah.
No.
But another problem. So that's my creative writing process, mentality. I'd love to know yours.
Go on, bro. I think, you know what, that's such a great way to be. And I wish, what I struggle with is, I like life structures. So I like to think, oh, I'm going to wake up that time, go on a run, come back and write.
How far are you running?
5 mile, maybe.
Okay. Luke Bow, you know.
AK.
What's that? AK.
So, yeah, something like that.
You know, he's sprinting as well. He's not doing them light. Yeah, he's striding, trust me.
And I like to, and then, so at 1 o'clock, I sit down and write. But sometimes a song doesn't come, you know.
You'll be lying in bed and it's just like, this is good, or that.
And I struggle with that, you know, and I wish, and I think I'm trying now to get into that mindset of, oh, you know, it is going to channel through you and it's meant to. And start thinking less, feeling more, and putting less pressure on the song's got to come by 2 o'clock. You know, if it doesn't, it doesn't. And you go again the next day, you know. I think that's what I'm trying to improve on now. But as for creative process, you can... Sometimes you'll find yourself frustrated for ages, but I find that hour where you're bashing away, getting frustrated. I find sometimes I go away and come back and something comes like that. Mm. So maybe I needed that hour of getting that stuff out. I heard Ed Sheeran say that it's like a dirty tap. So you write loads and loads of songs and then you get all the dirt out, and then eventually you start writing the songs, the good water comes. And I like that, and I'm sort of like, when I write a bad song, I think, oh, it's just that dirty water that needed to come out. So yeah, there's been a few dirty waters recently. I'm waiting for the pure water to come.
It's unreal.
Everyone says that, like, I was watching the Coldplay documentary.
I haven't seen it. I need to make a note.
That is so sick.
And Chris Martin's like,
he's the GOAT,
singing these most incredible songs. He's like, it's not going to make the album. And I'm just like, he's like, yeah, you have to write 10 before you write one good one. Mm. It's like, that's Chris Martin saying that, you know, like, and he's the GOAT. Yeah. He's like, I could be lying in bed and like, I've actually dreamed songs and woken up and voice noted them.
Wow.
It's so weird.
Yeah. That's how you know it's a divine thing, though.
Yes, totally. It's coming from some mad place. I don't understand it, but it's, yeah. But a lot.
Yeah, like, that happened to me once.
Like, I've worked with
I thought of a mad bar. I woke up, it was in my notes. I was like, what? I wrote that in my sleep.
Now, when I wasn't an artist, when I was just writing and producing for others, I used to work with a lot of, like, top line writers who are now huge, really successful people, but their methods I would really question, because they would take 3 songs and stick them together and use a melody from that song and the BPM of that song and the key of that song and be like, there you go, you've got a hit. And I'd be like, well, you've just stolen 3 things. But they're like, that's where music's coming from. You used to listen to Otis Redding, that sounds like Otis Redding.
That's what I mean. There is no right or wrong way. Like, no one has the answer.
Yeah.
I personally connect to songs that have more feeling in, but some of the biggest songs ever are written like that. So I can't sit here and go, oh, no, you can't write a song like that.
Do you think that this conversation of mental health and music is in a good place right now in society?
Yeah.
I think so. I feel like we're at, we're in
more
a place.
More so than ever. Yeah, but I think it's needed to be. I think there's been a rise because of social media, because of Spotify statistics that keep getting splashed in your face.
Yeah.
So
before, labels didn't really want to touch it, because obviously the more broken you are, the better songs and the better material you're going to have stuff to write about. But it's so apparent nowadays that everyone's suffering from day one, you know, of getting into the industry and having all these pressures of social media and all these other things, you know. And let alone with their own life. That's just their new life.
That we've all adopted. I think one conversation that I'd love to have with both of you is musicians, artists, writers, creatives, self-employed people, freelance people, on a general whole, don't always get paid. Because we do a lot for opportunity.
Yeah.
And then you do so much for opportunity into the point you get paid. But then when you're getting paid for the work, there comes a new set of rules and a new set of problems, because it's like, okay, well, I'm going to commission you to do this. So you need to do it the way I want you to do it. Or, yo, do your thing. But then I'm chasing you 2 months later on for the payment of something that I've just delivered on. And that conversation of financial well-being and money well-being and the implications that it then has on your art is something I don't think anybody ever discusses. And I think that really bothers me as like a creator, because I'm like, yo, if this can happen to people like us who are in the industry and we're in our mid-20s or early 30s and we're like seasoned, do you know what I'm saying? Like, we've been around, we've paid our respects, we've paid our dues, and people still take advantage. What do we need to give to the younger generation of these people for them to say, listen, work for free, but not too much, because it's going to bother you later on. Or charge this, but you know what? That one you should do because it's a good PR opportunity. Like, what advice would you give on that conversation?
It depends on the person. There's a lot of piss takers in the industry. You know, like, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. Mm. And when they want something, they want it yesterday. You give it to them yesterday. And like you said, you're chasing them for 2 more months and they don't want to reply to emails, but suddenly it was like hotline bling when you were today. Yeah, they needed something, you know?
And that whole...
That works across everyone, you know?
Like, yeah, I definitely think it works across a lot of industries, but I think why I feel so passionately about it when it comes to the creative arts is because we put our heart into it. Mm. Like, we are really out here putting our trauma on the line in not all cases, but in most cases, for their benefit on a time schedule. I hate that. Mm. I hate when it like, I can't do it. Yeah, sorry, on a timer, like, oh, we need this in 7 days. I panic. I end up going for a walk.
And you're like, yeah. You have to find your, going back to, you know, doing things for opportunity. Mm. I think you have to find this, you have to search for as many ways as possible to try and find financial stability. Because there are opportunities, whether that's, you know, for me, I was lucky enough to fall into corporate stuff on the side. No one knows about it. And I look at that as my money. And then everything else is opportunity, you know. When someone asks me to do something for free in music, I have less of a, well, how are you taking the mick out of? Because I've enabled myself to do that for free because I've done the gig that no one knew about and the whatever, a corporate gig or whatever. So that's enabled me to do it. And I know that other people might, if you're a producer, they might produce the adverts.
Yeah.
And so that's giving them their money. They don't particularly enjoy it.
So you're saying find ways in which you can exercise your talent in other areas and get paid.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I've had to do as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can't, you know, it's tough being a music. The top 1%, they're earning dollar, but.
Yeah. I just don't even think it's with musicians. We had some actors on earlier and they face very similar troubles. Athletes as well. Like you train all your life for an entire run or a fight and it doesn't go to plan and then you're at a place in your life where you just put your heart out there and it's a world full of business and it doesn't always think about how you're feeling.
Nah.
And that's like it's you know what it is,
that's if anything, the risk.
It's a real risk. Yeah.
But that's why we get up and we don't do what everyone else tells us.
There is definitely a thrill to it.
There's definitely
a thrill to it. We're just thrill seekers.
Yeah. I think we have higher highs than a lot of people, but we probably have lower lows.
Yeah, so. And I definitely do think with experience comes coping mechanisms 100%. In dealing with these lows.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, one of the ones was being homeless for me. That was like a...
Wow, tell us a bit more about this.
Like, so, yeah, when I was going through that really hard time with my depression and...
This is before you was in Crouch End?
No, this was after.
Okay,
so I'd left the
house. So you had
my deal.
You had your money in the bank.
Had my
Alexandra
money.
Alexandra Palace in
on
the balcony.
Yeah,
you're going to the spa.
What happened?
And then what happened?
I figured the best thing to do was remove myself from just a toxic situation and then work on my life. Just leaving. Just my brother come in his car. I packed all my stuff up. I was like, let's just get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about the money that's in this. I don't care about this that's in that.
Wow.
I was just like, all of that is just superficial rubbish that I don't care about, you know. I come from nothing, and I still exist at nothing, you know. Like I have money in the bank, it doesn't mean anything.
That is such a beautiful outlook, and I think a very very powerful quote. I come from nothing, and
I still exist in nothing, you know. Like no money or anything's like changed that. It's just I'm still that young kid in my mind that didn't deal with all these issues as a young man. So it doesn't matter how much I had.
So how long were you homeless for?
I was homeless for 6 months, just like sleeping on people's couches. Jumping on my mum's couch, sleeping in Ryan's van. We would travel around and no one knew I was homeless.
And what did you learn?
What did I learn?
Were you working harder when you were homeless?
Yeah, I was just working the same. I was just cracked on. That's all I knew how to do, was just keep going, you know.
That's such a powerful skill to keep going.
I get that from my mum, man. I get that from my mum. My mum's
mums are beautiful. Shout out all of our mums.
My mum is women are amazing, but my mum is, she's an alien, you know. Her life and the stuff she's been through, she should be the most bitter, angry person in the world, but she's the most loving and caring, and she just gives pure joy to everyone, you know.
I feel it. I feel it through you.
Dude, I get that from my mum, man. Everyone in my family gets that from my mum, you know. She's amazing. And yeah, it's just get up and get on with it, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
That comes from having a hard father,
what's so interesting. Sorry to interrupt you, but my mum used to say a very similar thing: cry, get over it, move on.
Yeah.
That was her formula for everything. It was, all right, you're upset? Go on, cry. Yeah. All right, now, get over it. Okay, now, move on.
Yeah.
Don't dwell in your depression.
Mm.
All right, unfortunately, we are coming to the end of this episode. But before we wrap it up, tell us more about what we can expect to find, hear, feel at your headline show coming up in Omera in April, Mr. Burr.
Get your tickets now. They're running out. They're running out. You can expect, look, I just hope that people come and are entertained, as I said before. Bit of dancing, bit of singing.
He's doing it a disservice. He is incredible. He will move your core. You will be feeling it in your spine, ladies and gentlemen. I need to get
you on the advert.
You need to get your budget right, you know? About opportunity. No, I'm playing. I'm so excited for your headline show and for the rest of your year.
Yeah, the EP's coming out, so it's exciting, yeah.
Sick. And Mr. Slang?
I finished the next 6 tracks that I'm going to release last week.
Wow.
Sick.
Got them mixed and mastered. And it's just about...
As part of a project or...?
Yeah, part of an EP, but I'll release them as singles then.
Mm-hmm.
Put them together as an EP. It's just about being... when I was single for the last year and a half, it's just a brutally honest... It's called My Brutally Honest Experience of Online Dating. It's just about It's just about.
I'm very excited to read the Slang book one day.
Oh man,
they're one in production.
Are you writing it or?
I mean, you got your budget. You can be the proofreader. You got your budget.
You're all about money. You got your budget. Being a nice guy.
I'll definitely write the I'll write something for it.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'd love to see a Slang picture book as well.
Of
like the life in pictures and quotes and stories.
Do you still write for other people? With other people?
Yes. Well, barely, but...
We should get into a session.
We should all get into a session together.
I would love that.
Let's do it. Yeah,
let's do it in your shed.
You know what? Sad news, guys. I'm moving out of the shed. Very sad.
Oh, we can do it in my flat. We can do it in my flat. It's easy.
Yeah, we're doing it in your flat, but I'm going to move into somewhere else. So I'm figuring it out. Life. But going back to what you said, what was it? I come from nothing, so I will still exist in nothing.
Yes.
And that is the moral of episode 4. Thank you very much for tuning in. You can follow Luke Burr and Dan Dare, aka Slang, on social media. And me, of course, the original Mummy's Boy, Ilford's finest, Hussein Manoa. Hey!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.